Some people are saying that like Gen Z's mental health issues are like directly caused by social media. And then others are pushing back saying like, no, it's just a correlation, not causation. Well, you're not alone if you're finding yourself like nodding along to the skeptics. But today we're going to do a deep dive into Jonathan Haidt's book, The Coddling of the American Mind, sorry, The Anxious Generation, to see if we can sway your thinking at all about that.
And just to be clear, before we jump in, we will circle back to that correlation versus causation debate at the end.
Absolutely.
It's a crucial part of the discussion.
But first, I think it's important to note that Haidt isn't some like tech-hating hermit. He's a respected social psychologist. And what I found really interesting is that he's actually invited criticism of his work. He said he's open to being wrong, which I think speaks volumes about his approach to this topic.
He's approaching it as a true academic. But let's get into the heart of his argument. Haidt points to this period between 2010 and 2015. He calls it the Great Rewiring, where childhood kind of transitioned from playing outside to being dominated by smartphones.
Okay, so imagine a world where kids are trading like tree climbing and kickball for like endless scrolling and posting. Haidt argues that this shift lines up almost perfectly with the spike in mental health issues among teens. Does that resonate with you at all?
It's a pretty stark contrast, even just thinking back a decade or two. What's particularly interesting is that Haidt dives into how this shift seems to be impacting girls more intensely.
He specifically calls out platforms like Instagram and Snapchat, right? It's easy to see how those like visual platforms could become breeding grounds for social comparison and anxiety, especially when it comes to appearance.
And he uses this really powerful anecdote in the book about a 10-year-old girl named Alexis Spence. Her life really took a downturn after she started using Instagram. And it's a stark reminder that this isn't some abstract problem. Like, it's affecting real kids in profound ways.
It's heartbreaking, and it makes you wonder about the long-term consequences for this generation.
And it's not just girls.
Oh, yeah.
Haidt also examines what he calls the long decline of males. He's noticed this trend of boys becoming less engaged in the real world, and he believes the allure of the virtual world, particularly things like video games and pornography, is playing a significant role.
So instead of like pursuing real-world achievements or engaging in face-to-face interactions, they're retreating into these digital spaces. Makes you wonder if there's a fear of risk-taking or a lack of resilience developing because of this.
He uses a really compelling example, actually. He talks about his own godson who became increasingly detached from reality due to excessive screen time. He was spending hours upon hours in these virtual worlds and struggling to connect with people and activities in the real world.
It's like they're trading real-life experiences for virtual ones. But Haidt doesn't just stop at describing the problem, right? He identifies what he calls the four foundational harms of a phone-based childhood.
And these are really at the core of his argument. He talks about social deprivation, sleep deprivation, attention fragmentation, and addiction.
Ooh, that's, yeah, I can see that.
Each one of these harms has the potential to have a lasting impact on young people's development and well-being.
So it's not just about being glued to a screen. It's about the potential consequences for their social skills, their sleep patterns, their ability to focus, and their susceptibility to addictive behaviors. Have you noticed any of these patterns in your own life or the lives of people around you?
I think it's hard to ignore, honestly. But what really struck me is that Haidt takes it a step further and argues that a phone-based life can actually lead to what he calls spiritual degradation.
Now that's a powerful statement.
It is.
What exactly does he mean by spiritual degradation?
He's not necessarily talking about religion, but about a sense of meaning and purpose, a connection to something larger than ourselves. He argues that the constant stimulation and distraction of a phone-based life can hinder our ability to experience awe, wonder, and those deeper
So
connections.
it's like we're so caught up in the digital world that we're losing touch with the natural world and like with our own inner selves.
And he even draws parallels with ancient wisdom traditions that emphasize the importance of real-world connection, self-transcendence, and mindful engagement with the world around us.
It's almost like our constant connection to our devices is cutting us off from something deeper and more meaningful.
It
It's
is.
a thought-provoking idea. He talks about his students going on what he calls awe walks, basically disconnecting from technology and reconnecting with nature. And he found that these walks had a profound impact on their sense of well-being and their outlook on life.
Like hitting the reset button on our brains and our souls.
Right. But this brings us to a crucial point in Haidt's argument. And that is, like, he doesn't just diagnose the problem.
Mm-hmm.
He calls for collective action to address it.
Right.
He believes that this isn't something that we can just solve individually.
Uh-huh.
It requires a societal response.
He's arguing that it's a collective action problem.
Okay.
We might think we're making individual choices, like giving our kids a smartphone because all their friends have one, but those individual choices can have negative consequences for the group as a whole.
It's like a domino effect.
Yeah.
What might seem like a harmless decision at the individual level can actually contribute to this larger societal problem. He even outlines potential solutions, doesn't he?
Yes, and they range from government regulation of tech companies to promoting what he calls a free-range childhood, where kids have more opportunities for unstructured play and exploration.
So like a 90s childhood.
Yeah. He believes we need to rethink the way we're raising kids in the digital age
mm-hmm.
and create a more balanced and healthy environment for them to thrive.
It's like we're trying to raise kids on Mars, as he puts it.
That's a great analogy.
We've transported them to this new digital environment without fully understanding the long-term consequences.
Right.
And now we need to figure out how to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you might be thinking, this all sounds very alarming, but can we really do anything about it? Is it even possible to turn back the tide?
Well, that's a question we'll delve into further as we continue our deep dive.
Okay.
But before we move on, I want to highlight something that really impressed me about Haidt's approach.
Okay.
He's not claiming to have all the answers.
Uh-huh.
In fact, he actively encourages criticism and debate.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to hear from people who disagree with him. He even acknowledges that he could be wrong about some things.
That's so refreshing, especially in today's climate mm-hmm. where everyone seems so entrenched in their own opinions.
Right. It shows a genuine commitment to finding the best solutions, regardless of personal biases.
Totally.
He's really approaching this as a scientist and a scholar.
Yeah.
And I think that gives his arguments even more weight.
So even if you're not fully on board with Haidt's conclusions, I think his willingness to engage in reasoned debate and to be open to different perspectives
yeah.
is something we can all learn from.
I think so, too. It's that humility and openness to dialogue that makes his work so compelling. But let's get back to the idea of collective action.
Oh, yeah.
You might be wondering if this isn't just a parenting issue. Like, can't parents just say no to screens and solve the problem?
That's what I was thinking, too. Like, why do we need a whole societal shift?
Right.
When parents can just, you know, parent.
It's not quite that simple. Haidt acknowledges that parents play a crucial role.
Yeah.
But he also argues that we're up against some pretty powerful forces here. Remember the story about Alexa Spence and how her life spiraled after Instagram?
Right.
Well, her parents tried to limit her use, but they were essentially battling an algorithm designed to keep her hooked.
It's like trying to outsmart a supercomputer that's specifically programmed to, like, exploit our vulnerabilities. It feels like an unfair fight, honestly.
Exactly. And Haidt makes this really interesting point that individual parents trying to, like, buck the trend often face a collective action problem.
Okay.
If all the other kids in the class have smartphones,
right.
it puts immense pressure on parents to give in, even if they have reservations.
So even if you as a parent, like, decide to hold off on giving your kid a phone, you're kind of swimming upstream against this cultural current.
You're right. It's like saying, my kid can't drink soda when everyone else is guzzling it.
Yeah.
It becomes this social pressure cooker. That's why Haidt advocates for things like age verification systems for social media.
Kind of like how we have age limits on alcohol and tobacco.
Precisely. He argues that raising the age of access to social media would take some of the pressure off parents and create a more level playing field for kids.
It's fascinating because he's essentially saying that we need to rethink our whole approach to raising kids in the digital age.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about setting screen time limits.
Mm-hmm.
It's about creating a culture where those limits are the norm, not the exception.
And it goes beyond just parents. He also talks about the role of schools in fostering a healthier relationship with technology. He's a big advocate for schools going phone free.
You mean like completely banning phones from school?
He believes it would dramatically reduce distractions in the classroom and help kids focus on learning and interacting with each other face to face. He even suggests bringing back longer recess periods and promoting more unstructured playtime.
It's like he's saying, let kids be kids, let them play, explore, and socialize. Without the constant interruption of notifications and the pressure to be, like, connected all the time.
That's a great way to put it. And I think this ties back to his idea of spiritual degradation. He's not saying that technology is inherently evil,
right,
but that it can crowd out the things that truly nourish our souls.
Okay.
Things like connection with nature, meaningful relationships, and a sense of purpose.
So it's not just about the negative effects on mental health. It's about the potential loss of something deeper, something that gives our lives meaning and direction.
Exactly. And this is where his call for collective action becomes even more crucial. He's arguing that we need to create a society that prioritizes those things.
Okay.
A society where technology serves our needs rather than the other way around.
But is that even realistic? Can we really change the trajectory we're on?
Yeah.
I mean, technology is only going to become more pervasive and influential in our lives.
He's cautiously optimistic. He points to historical examples of successful collective action movements.
Okay.
Like the fight against smoking or drunk driving.
Mm.
These were deeply entrenched cultural practices that seemed impossible to change at the time.
Right.
But through a combination of public awareness campaigns, policy changes, and social pressure, we were able to shift the norms and create a safer environment for everyone.
So you're saying that even though it might seem daunting, it's not impossible to change the course we're on.
Exactly. It starts with recognizing that there's a problem. It starts with having open and honest conversations about the role of technology in our lives and the lives of our children. And it starts with being willing to question the status quo and advocate for change.
Okay, so let's say we buy into this idea that there's a problem and that collective action is necessary. What does that look like in practice? What specific steps can we take?
Well, HATE outlines a multi-pronged approach involving governments, tech companies, schools, and parents. He argues that we need stricter regulations on tech companies, especially when it comes to protecting children.
Okay.
He points to the UK's age-appropriate design code as a good model.
That's the one that requires companies to design online services with children's best interests in mind, right?
Yes. It's about putting safeguards in place to protect kids from the most harmful aspects of the online world. He also advocates for things like age verification systems, parental controls, and digital literacy education.
So it's not just about banning technology altogether. It's about using it responsibly and teaching our kids how to do the same.
Exactly. And he also emphasizes the importance of promoting a free-range childhood. He believes that kids need more opportunities for unstructured play, exploration, and risk-taking.
So like letting them climb trees and build forts instead of being glued to their screens.
Yes. It's about giving them the space and freedom to develop their physical, social, and emotional skills in the real world.
It sounds like he's advocating for a more balanced approach, one that recognizes the benefits of technology, but also acknowledges its potential downsides and tries to mitigate them.
That's a great way to put it. He's not anti-technology. He's pro-humanity. He wants to make sure that technology serves our needs rather than the other way around.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So what about those who still say this is all just a generational thing? They might argue that every generation thinks the next one is doomed. How do we address that skepticism?
Well, that's where the data comes in. HATE presents a pretty compelling case by showing how these trends align with specific changes in technology and social norms. He points to a mountain of evidence surveys, studies, even hospital admissions that show a clear and dramatic shift in adolescent mental health beginning around 2012.
And that timing is key, right?
Mm-hmm.
It coincides with the widespread adoption of smartphones and the rise of social media.
Exactly. It's not just anecdotal evidence. It's statistically significant and happening across multiple countries. It's a global phenomenon.
But couldn't some people still argue that correlation doesn't equal causation? How do we know that social media is actually causing these problems and not just something that happens to coincide with them?
That's a fair point, and it's a crucial one to address. We'll explore it in more detail in the next part of our deep dive.
Okay.
We'll look at the research that HATE cites and see if it really backs up his claims.
Sounds good. I'm really curious to see what the evidence shows. All right, so we've talked about the potential problems of a phone-based childhood and HATE's call for, like, collective action.
Right.
But let's tackle that elephant in the room, you know, the whole correlation versus causation debate.
Right, because some people might be listening and thinking, sure, mental health issues and smartphone use seem to be rising at the same time, but that doesn't mean one is causing the other.
Exactly. It could be a coincidence, or maybe there's some other, like, underlying factor that's influencing both trends.
Mm-hmm.
So how does HATE address this skepticism?
Well, he doesn't just wave it away. he actually dives into the research and highlights studies that have gone beyond simple correlation and looked for evidence of causation.
Okay, so what kind of studies are we talking about? Like, give me the details.
For example, there are studies that have randomly assigned teenagers to either reduce their social media use or maintain their normal usage.
Okay.
And guess what? The results consistently show that those who reduced their use experienced improvements in their mental health, things like reduced anxiety and depression, better sleep, and improved body image.
That's pretty significant.
Yeah.
It suggests that it's not just that people who are already struggling are drawn to social media.
Right.
It's that, like, social media use itself can actually contribute to those struggles.
Exactly. And it's not just one or two studies.
Yeah.
There's a growing body of research that's pointing in the same direction.
Okay.
It's becoming harder and harder to dismiss this as just a coincidence.
Now, even if we accept that there's a causal link, some people might still argue that, you know, it's up to individuals to manage their own social media use.
Mm.
They might say, if you're feeling anxious or depressed because of social media, just log off.
That's a common refrain.
Yeah.
And it's not entirely unreasonable. Uh-huh. But Haight argues that it's not that simple. Remember those four foundational harms we discussed? Hmm. Social deprivation, sleep deprivation, attention fragmentation, and addiction.
Right.
Those harms create a kind of vulnerability that makes it really hard to just log off.
So it's like saying to someone who's struggling with addiction, just quit using.
Yeah.
It ignores the underlying factors that are contributing to the problem.
Exactly. And it also overlooks the fact that we're not just dealing with individual choices here. We're dealing with a culture that's saturated with technology, a culture that often glorifies being, like, connected 24/7.
Right.
It's hard to swim against that current, especially when you're a teenager who's already facing so many pressures.
That's why Haight argues that we need a more comprehensive approach.
Right.
One that involves collective action on multiple levels.
Mm-hmm.
Government regulation, parental involvement, educational initiatives, and even cultural shifts.
Right. It's not about demonizing technology altogether. It's about recognizing its potential harms and finding ways to mitigate them.
Yeah.
It's about creating a world where technology enhances our lives rather than diminishes them.
Okay. So let's say we're convinced.
Mm-hmm.
We agree that there's a problem, that it's at least partially caused by excessive social media use,
mm-hmm.
and that collective action is necessary. What can we do? Where do we even start?
Well, as we discussed earlier, Haight offers a range of potential solutions. Things like stricter regulations on tech companies, age verification systems, parental controls, digital literacy education, and even promoting a free-range childhood with less screen time and more unstructured play.
Those are all great ideas, but they sound pretty ambitious. Do we really think we can make those kinds of changes?
Yeah.
It feels like we're up against some pretty powerful forces here.
It's definitely a challenge, but Haight is actually cautiously optimistic.
Okay.
He points to historical examples of successful collective action movements, like the fight against smoking or drunk driving.
Those were tough battles.
Yeah.
But they ultimately led to significant changes in behavior and policy.
Exactly. And those changes didn't happen overnight. They required sustained effort, public awareness campaigns, and a willingness to challenge the status quo.
So he's saying that even though the problem might seem daunting,
mm-hmm.
it's not insurmountable.
Right. He believes that if enough people recognize the issue and are willing to work together, we can create a healthier future for ourselves and for future generations.
And what I find really encouraging is that he's not claiming to have all the answers. He's actively inviting criticism.
Yeah.
And encouraging debate. He wants to hear from people who disagree with him. He even acknowledges that he could be wrong about some things.
That's what I admire most about his approach. It's not about being right.
Mm-hmm.
It's about finding the best solutions.
Yeah.
Even if it means revising our own beliefs along the way.
It's about being open to new information, to different perspectives, and to the possibility that we might need to, like, change course.
Exactly. And I think that's a powerful message for all of us.
Yeah.
Regardless of where we stand on this issue.
Well, this deep dive has been eye-opening, to say the least. We've covered a lot of ground, from the potential harms of a phone-based childhood to the call for collective action and the complexities of the correlation versus causation debate. It's certainly given me a lot to think about.
I think the key takeaway here is that this is an ongoing conversation.
Right.
And it's one that we all need to be a part of.
Yeah.
It's about being informed, being critical, and being willing to engage in, you know, reasoned debate.
And it's about remembering that the well-being of our children and future generations is at stake.
Well said.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. If this conversation has sparked any thoughts or questions for you, we encourage you to continue exploring this important topic. Until next time, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep pushing for a better world.